That's right. You're tuned to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org. Time now to jump on into the dustbin of history.
Wonderful people overnight. I think Max Schneid is brilliant and Arpo Martin brilliant, but I don't know how many people get to hear them. And I want to say thanks.
That's tomorrow.
Tremendous job.
Well, thank you very much for that.
Can't do it. We'll do it live. I can all write it and we'll do it live. Thing sucks.
To another edition of the Dustbin of History. I'm your curator and janitor, Max Schmid. A lost episode, never before rebroadcast, of Gene Shepherd. This one from the Alan Kalish collection. All about flying kites, flying balloons, cameras on balloons, and other things attached to balloons. So, hopefully we'll get through Mr. Shepherd without any interference. And this one was recorded straight to cassette by Mr. Alan Kalish, who was kind enough many years ago to send me all of the original cassettes, which I painstakingly repaired and remastered. So this is taken directly from his original recording, which was made on February 8th, 1971. We're going to hear a lot about government surplus balloons and motors and kite making and more. Camera and balloon, some people call it. And, you know, since I didn't have time to come up with any incidental music, and since this one runs over an hour long, actually the show is just 44 minutes as usual, but there's a whole lot of news and maybe even the start of Long John. Well, we won't get to the Long John, but I may just let it run all the way through all the news at the end. So if you've forgotten about Vietnam, you'll get a reminder as we invade Laos at the end of this episode of Gene Shepherd. So let's hear it, shall we? Never before rebroadcast from the Alan Kalish Collection. Camera and Balloon, Gene Shepherd, February 8th, 1971. Did I mention this is the Dustbin of History on WBAI New York? Probably.
Salute all of you out there, by George. Kiss Mama, kiss Papa, you made it again. All together now. Bring it up, large skip. Oh, no, not yet. We don't want to give him any echo chamber so early in the week. Please. All together now, gang. Let's sing. This is the self-expression rag. Okay, all right, gang, let's get on here now.
That was not bad. Bring that on there, Skip, if you will. Let's go. What a cacophony. Holy smokes, I can't even hear the sound. Oh, that sounds good. That's great. That's great. I'll tell you, things are popping around here. Now, oh, yes, before I get underway here, I've got to explain something. I've been getting a lot of letters, technical letters, of course, and a lot of technically minded listener types out there, and a lot of technical letters out there about what kind of a jew's harp I use. People write in and say, because a lot of guys are buying these little lead 15-cent cockamamie jew's harps, which all they'll do, friend, is give you bad front teeth and probably chop your tongue to ribbons. But no, I'm serious. There's a lot of bad ones around. Now listen carefully to this jew's harp. Now listen. That's a jew's harp. That ain't no kid stuff. Now listen again. Beautiful instrument. Now, enough of that. Miss friends, learn ventriloquism. Throw your voice. Amazing. Mystify your friends. Anywhere, you get lots of fun fooling the teacher, policemen, peddlers, and surprise and fool all your friends with the little magic ventrilo. Sounds like I'm selling something here, doesn't it? Well, I ain't. I ain't. That's my problem. 23rd floor has been yelling about that for years. All right, now let's get on with work here, friends. Work. Hey, listen, I have a sad little note here from Cincinnati. Not sad. It's kind of funny, really. You know, it's sad. Depends on how you look at it. Cincinnati, Ohio, AP. An aerial photography adventure went awry as a helium-filled balloon with camera attached, used by three youths from suburban Kenwood, snapped its 1,000-foot line and drifted off into the wild blue yonder. We did it before, when we went up to 450 feet, and we got great pictures then, Robert Seaford, 15, said. This time we wanted to get a little higher. That's right, kid. Ain't that the truth? Almost everybody that tries to get a little higher gets his wingies clipped. That's a good way to get shot down, kid. I mean, you don't settle for 450 feet, go up to 1,000, and that's it, the ball game. You lost the balloon, the string, the whole bit, helium. I'll tell you one thing, though. I can just see this guy flying along in his Cherokee when all of a sudden he sees in front of him a helium-filled balloon operated by a bunch of 15-year-old kids. And yeah, it could be exciting. But one of the greatest aerial adventures I ever heard of, people are all interested in aerial adventures, of course. Did you hear about this guy up in, I think it was either Rochester or Buffalo a couple of years ago? He went down, and this will interest you, Skip, because you're a surplus junk type guy. Yes, of course, you bought more than your share of surplus electronics, haven't you? All right. You've gone into these surplus joints, and there's hardly a man with a soul so dead who doesn't to himself say when he goes by one of these places that says surplus, says, holy smokes, maybe I can get something great here. And, of course, all they've got in there is they've got these switchblades in the window. Have you seen those surplus? You wonder what kind of an army they had switchblades in. And they're all surplus. And nevertheless, he went into the surplus joint. And he got some genuine surplus. He bought some of these Signal Corps balloons. You know, these weather balloons? Have you seen them advertised? And he bought a whole bunch of these babies. And they were cheap, and so he got them for about a dollar a piece or something. They weren't the big ones. They were maybe 4 or 5 feet around. And they're made out of, I think they're made out of something like neoprene. Something like they're plastic, really. They're not rubber types. And so he takes these things home. He's sitting around. He's got a bunch of balloons in the house. Well, you know, men often do that. They buy stuff just because it's great to have. You know, you have no reason to have it, you know. Did you hear about poor Dave Garraway's got 6 Norden bomb sights? Yeah, there's a strange guy. No, Garraway, you know, a couple of years ago went through, he really got involved in this bomb shelter thing. He built a bomb shelter. No, remember when everybody was running around building bomb shelters and that craze swept the country? And I bet there's a lot of guys now with a great big hole in the ground with canned goods down in it. What the hell are they going to do with it? But nevertheless, he built himself a bomb shelter. Well, the other day, I heard that he also owns 6 Norden bomb sites. Now, I wonder what a psychologist could do with that. I just thought I'd bring that up for grabs and let you, you know. But, you know, it's easy enough. You go into a place. I bought a couple of things like that. I went into a surplus place one day, and this was, when I had a lot of great surplus around, all kinds of wild surplus. And I walked into this joint with a friend of mine, another ham, amateur radio operator, and there's a whole raft of junk, see, you, fantastic junk. And it's brown boxes, all with GI paint all over it, and serial numbers like MG10714-9, a QMC/4, serial number 01000, that kind of stuff. And you just look at all this stuff, it's great. You wonder what it's for. And it's got knobs, and it's got switches on it, and lights that light up and everything. Well, I saw a pile of things. I thought, now that's something that I should have. Now, I never really thought it out why I should have it. It's just one of those things like, I should have this. And I bought, you're looking at a guy right now who bought $17 worth of 28-volt Selsun motors. Now, I've got the most beautiful collection of left-hand, right-hand, and the in-between Selsun motors you ever saw in your life. And they're all GI colored. They're painted nice. You know, they got nice green and red and purple and blue leads coming out of them. And so I bought them, and I had a big box full of them, a tremendous big wooden crate they came in, all packed. And they were new, by the way. It says an unused, new condition. And I says, well, gee, you know, it's not every day that you can get a chance to buy a $17 box of Selsun motors there. Have a nice assortment, you know. If you ever need a Selsun motor, you run down the basement and pull it out, and you're in business just like that. So I went down the basement and put them down down the basement where at that time I was living outside of Chicago. I was going to school. I had a box of Selsun motors. Of course, my mother got real butt. Because this box was, I'd say, 15 feet high, about 20 feet long, weighed about 7.5 tons. And they had it come, they brought it in a big semi-tractor, unloaded it. Oh, these Selsun motors are heavy. And I had an assortment of Selsun motors. Well, I stuck them down in the basement. Never used them. And they became a giant white elephant around the house. Everybody around the house is bugged all the time about the Selsun motors. And my mother, of course, didn't know what a Selsun motor was. And I'll grant you, listener, you don't know what a Selsun motor is, right? I do. I know all about Selsuns. Now, I'll tell you why I bought a Selsun motor. I don't know why I'm having this personal confrontation night tonight. But when I was in the Signal Corps, we were always talking about Selsun motors. We had Selsun motors all over our radar sets. And I'd go up to the antenna dish and so on. I'd look at the Selsun motors working, and they're great. If you don't know what a Selsun motor is, they're magic. And Selsun motors are used in aircraft, all kinds of things. Well, I saw that box of Selsun motors, and I knew I had to have them because I always secretly wanted one when I was playing with a radar set in the Signal Corps. Well, then I found myself with a box of Selsuns. You want to know how many Selsun motors came in that box, friends? You're curious, huh? I don't imagine you are. But there may be a few technically minded cuckoos out there who might be interested in knowing how many Selsun motors Shepard owned. Shepard owned 43 Selsun motors. And they were packed for overseas shipment, which meant that they came with all these moisture-absorbent bags and little bags that hang in there. It says, do not remove. In case of removal, be careful because the moisture will get in and the bugs will eat the leads and all that stuff. They were beautifully packed, and they came with spare wiring harness. I don't know what the... you're a horse cuckoo. What is the plural of harness? Is it harnesses? Harnesses. Oh, that's dull. Just plain harnesses? Harness eye? Harnese? Harnese. Oh, I see. Harnese. Very good. George, those horse people are literate. It's all get out, aren't they? But nevertheless, there seems to be a little Italian stream running through it, too. But they came with beautifully wrapped harnese, which is extra wiring harnesses. Harnese? Harnese. What's not? Here's another note. Oh, they came with them straps. I see. That's what real horse people call a harness. Hey, help me put on them straps on that horse. So, nevertheless, I got this great box of Selsun Motors. Now, you want to hear the happy ending to it, friends? This is WOR, New York, the happy ending. Speaking of happy endings, do you have that little goodie in there?
Okay, hit the button.
Too many burglaries are committed because someone's eyes are closed. This is Patrolman Jesse Peterman of the New York City Police Department. Burglars count on people to mind their own business. They boldly approach unoccupied homes and apartments, secure in the knowledge that nobody is watching. The strange car that parks or cruises your block is cause for suspicion. The stranger who loiters on your block or in your building is cause for suspicion. When you think something is wrong on your block or in your building, call the police. Better an unnecessary call than a burglarized home. Burglars want eyes closed. What better reason to keep your eyes open? Remember, a burglar usually works alone. Don't you become his partner. This was a reminder from your Community Relations Division of the New York City Police Department.
Hooray for Princeton. Hooray for the Ivy League. Hooray for all deep thinkers everywhere. Hooray for... Yeah, once again, Princeton has done it. At least WPRB has done it, which is, as you know, the deep-thinking Princeton radio station. They're bringing Gene Shepherd to Alexander Hall in Princeton live as a big, fat, speckled bird. Who's Shepherd? You slob. What do you mean, who's Shepherd? Bring it up there.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. That's enough of that there. Yeah, now I'm going to be at Princeton the 13th, February 13th, and it's Saturday at 8 p.m., Alexander Hall. That's right in the heart of Princeton, New Jersey. And if you'd like to call them for ticket information, dial area code 609-452-3655. Hang loose if you want to hear some true camp. True camp. You got him? K. Kaiser? True camp. Listen to this. This is bad news.
Here's our theme song, Thinking of You. A beautiful thought, beautifully expressed by Harry Babbitt.
I've grown so lonely.
Listen to him move. You know, it's hard to believe people dug this stuff. Seriously. That's old K. Kaiser, man. College of Musical Knowledge. I'll give you a brass fiddle-gee boy with bronze oak leaf palm if you can tell me who the featured girl vocalist was with that band. That was Harry Babbitt, who sang... He would sing the titles. You know, there was a whole craze there for a while with Sammy Kaye and all those guys, and this guy would come on and say, Deep Purple Falls. And then the band leader, all band leaders in that day and age, thought themselves tremendous poetry readers. Some of the worst poetry reading I ever heard in my life was Sammy Kaye reading Edgar Guest. And he used to do it over the... Do you remember that? They used to read it over the beginning. He'd say, now a lovely song sung by a lovely young lady about a lovely thought. When the deep purple falls with Miss Who? Don't you remember who sang in this band? All right. Why do I know all that stuff? And Sully Mason sang... La da tee 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 tee. What a sickening song. Da da tee tee. But nevertheless, you want to hear about my Selsun Motors? Wait a minute. There's a happy ending to this, friends. You have not heard what the happy ending is. Old Shep had 43 Selsun Motors in the basement, packed in their original packing, 28 volts. And they were two phase Selsun Motors. You don't know what that means, do you? Gee, I know a lot of stuff. I'll tell you, sometimes it gets me sick just to think how much stuff I know that is useless. Hardly anybody comes up to me and says, Shep, would you please give me a definition of a two-phase Selsun motor and how the wiring diagram works there? And I know, you see, I know these things. A lot of things I don't know, I don't remember. Who got elected in the last election? I don't know these things, you know. The other day, somebody said, Eugene McCarthy, he used to play. Did he play with the Browns? And that turns out, no, you know, I don't remember the real stuff. So, nevertheless, I bought 43 Selsun Motors, and I was the laugh of the neighborhood. I just tell you, I was a pariah and a martyr.
And, what are you writing all the time in there? I'm just curious. I just like to know what you're writing. Labels all the time. Labels? What are you labeling? Well, I just want to know. I'm just curious. But I bought these motors. Let's get back to the show here. 43 of them. And they stayed in the basement. And my mother, I moved out of the house. And now I'm living out in the wide world. And, of course, I have 7 tons of Selsun motors left home. And that didn't go with my mother's fern plants. And, her geraniums and all that stuff. And so one time she was going to move. She called me up long distance and said, what am I going to do with all that stuff you've got in the basement, that big box? It's beginning to sink down into the concrete. I said, well, Ma, why don't you move it with you? You never know, you know. There might be a need for it. She said, oh, please, what am I going to do with it? I said, oh, Ma, gee whiz, I want them, you know, you never know. And this is a male thing, isn't it? And so she moved the Selsun motors. And don't think I heard the last of that. Now, I heard a lot about that. Well, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, roughly, I am looking through one of my favorite reading materials. You know, I'm constantly reading 73, QSD, CQ, all these magazines, electronic news and so forth. There, back in the want ad section, it said, I am looking for 28-volt Selsun motors, two-phase. Will pay up to, you ready for this, friends? $35 apiece for Selsun motors in good condition. Well, I don't have to tell you that within 5 minutes there was a special delivery letter in the mail. And 2.5 days later, I got a letter back. And there was all exclamation points all over it. And it said, you mean in factory chitons with a spare harnessy? And I said, yes, indeed. I was in the Catford, see. You know what I sold them for? Let it be, purple false. I, frankly, friends, am now in the Selsun motor business. No, these are little things. These are the dreams you always have, you know? And it actually worked. Now, I don't know what this guy is doing with Selsun motors. I understand that they make tremendous, excellent weights. You know, put in the bottom of gunny sacks when you have one of your friends sewed into it. But, what a sick mind. But nevertheless, they're handy. But as a kid, now this is a male thing. I'm going to do a male show here tonight, and it's related to that little incident of the helium balloon. Hear about that guy up in Rochester who I was telling you went into the surplus, George? You didn't think I'd get back to it, right, huh? Well, I am back to it. He bought about 24 surplus weather balloons, and he brought them home. Of course, everybody laughed, and they snorted. And he had a box of them. And, you know, it's not easy to be laughed at when you do something as basically exciting to a male as buy something wild at the surplus store. You know what I mean. And so he's fooling around down the basement with these balloons. And somebody said, well, what are they for, Charlie? And he said, well, you put gas in them, see, and they go up. And they send back weather or something. You have a string on it or something. And it has a transmitter, sends back weather. I said, well, you don't have any transmitters. You don't care what the weather. All you got to do is call weather. You gave you the weather. You don't have to put up a balloon, you know. So that's true. You never know, though. So he fooled around a couple of days, and then it hit him one afternoon at work. Balloons, balloons, balloons. Think of it. Think of a balloon, friends. What do balloons do? They go up, right? Well, that means that we think of other kinds of balloons, not just little balloons in the park. Think of the Gordon Bennett Trophy Race. You know, those big balloons that's number 42 on the side with a basket hanging on the bottom. Wouldn't you like to go out in a balloon sometime? Well, he took 12 of these babies out in the backyard one Saturday. You hear the story? And he bought somewhere, and I don't know where he got it, but he got a hold of some helium. It's not easy to get helium, you know, but he got some helium, and he filled these babies up. Now, they're big. They're about 5 feet around. These are big, big ones, you know, big silver ones. He's got about 5 balloons now that are 5 feet around. And so they have rings on the bottom to which the mooring cable was attached when they were original. So he says, why don't I get some nylon,
And he rushes down in the basement, and he comes up with a big roll of nylon clothesline, to which he cuts about 9 15-foot pieces, and he ties them on the bottom of the balloons. You got it? Now it's getting exciting. See, they're tugging away there, and he's got them hooked up to stakes in the ground. And one of his friends comes over and says, "Geez, look at them balloons flying there. Boy, oh boy, look at them making hardly wait to get up." He says, "Yep. What are you going to do with them?" "Well, I got an idea." He went into the house when everybody went to the Bohacks. He went into the house, and he got a rocking chair. And he tied the balloons to the rocking chair. First, of course, anchoring it to the garage. And now he has a rocking chair that is 5 feet up in the air. You got it? And the balloons are hanging way up in the air now, saying, "Boy, it's tugging away." Well, he could not resist. He got in a rocking chair, and he hollered to his friend, Fred. He says, "Cast off, Fred!" And Fred cast off, and whoosh, up he went. And within about 8.5 milliseconds, this guy is 5,000 feet over New York State, sitting in his rocking chair. A lot of you people are thinking I'm telling you a story, but this is an absolute truth. Well, here he is. He's wild. You know, he's sitting in his rocking chair, and it's got regular armrests. He's holding up. He doesn't even have a safety belt. He's just sitting there looking down. Well, you think Dr. Doolittle is insane. If you think flying around like that nun that does on TV, listen, that nun doesn't get up into the upper atmosphere, as far as I know. She doesn't get in the basic traffic pattern of major airports. Well, that's what he did. And here he is, 5,000 feet in the air, and all of a sudden, a DC-7C goes by. And these guys are all looking out. The people are in the airplane. See, they're all looking out at this guy. Here he's sitting in a rocking chair with the balloons. Well, now, it's not easy for a pilot to radio the control tower that he's just passed a guy sitting in a rocking chair at 5,000 feet. Which is what he had to do. He says, "Hey, there's a guy in a rocking chair here at 5,000 feet, and he seems to be right in the basic approach pattern, the ILS pattern approach here, right to the airport." And sure enough, they picked him up on radar. And, you know, not every rocking chair is picked up on radar, and this one was. And here's this guy sitting up there looking, and he's going up. Not going down, he's going up. Well, he was terrified. Well, they followed him around with the radar. He's going up. He's drifting out. There's a lake up there. So he's drifting out over the lake. And he's stabilized. A balloon will stabilize. They don't just keep going up. And this balloon stabilized at about 5,500 feet, which meant that there is where it was sort of at balance. You see, he's not going up. He's not going down. He's just drifting around. Well, of course, the word got out the neighborhood right away. Every guy that had a Cherokee or a Cessna went up to see the guy. But he was just sitting there. That to me, for those of you who are interested in sartorial notes, he was wearing a straw hat. And it's kind of exciting to go up and look at this guy. Well, he flew around and people flying around looking at him. And finally, after hours, he drifted down. You know what happens when it gets cold? Of course, as it gets closer to nighttime, the balloon, the gas begins to contract and it loses its lift, and down he came. Well, he came down very, very gradually until, about 1 o'clock in the morning, he finally made a beautiful two-rocker landing. He landed right on the rockers. He made a two-rocker landing right in the middle of a farm field there. And, of course, there was a great crowd of people who were running along the ground following him. He had no landing lights either. He had no running lights. Right? And they finally picked him up, and down he came. Well, of course, he was a hero in the neighborhood. I understand, too, that he received a couple of letters from the FAA for unqualified flying in the major airways. But nevertheless, he was a hero. I have not heard any more about this guy since. I'd like to know what he's doing in the surplus stores. He says, I understand there's rockets and everything available, but... Oh, sure. Did you know that at one time... Well, it sounds hard to believe. You know that at one time that they had the propulsion units of German V-1 rockets around? You put that on the back of your Mustang and you'll go, man. And there were guys who did it. But one of the things that I thought was... maybe it's upper New York State. This is the land of the cuckoo anyway. Architectural cuckoos, you have ever read those things like Archibald's Folly? Like I said, well, there's a million of them up there in New York State, Bullwinkle's Boo-Boo. And it's the local site, and everybody goes there, and the guy built a house in the shape of a Coke bottle. and it revolves and has birds at the top of it. Well, that's New York State, and I think one of the greatest examples of that kind of cuckooism was the guy, did you hear about the guy in Rochester here a couple of years ago? Who got an outboard motor. Now, he figured this out. He got tired of scuba diving, which everybody does. You know, this is a nothing thing. After a while, you get tired of surfing. That gets to be the same thing. I wonder, surfing is probably the dullest sport ever invented. You know, just keep coming back and going out and coming back. And after a while, you know, you've seen one wave. You've seen them all. And so this guy was getting bored with all that. And he strapped on his back. Now, get this, Skip. He strapped on his back an outboard motor. Now, everybody's going to say that's ridiculous. He took off and he went right across Lake Ontario. And his head is sticking out in front, you know, like one of these, what do they call that thing that sticks out in front of them with the golden wings and all that? Oh, you know. What they used to put on clipper ships, that lady made out of wood. She wasn't called a centerpiece. Now, what the heck was she called? What do they call that thing yet? It's right on the tip of my ear there. There it is. Figurehead. Yeah, oh, yeah. That's like the president. Yeah. And it just goes down. It just... What's the matter with that? A figurehead is a figurehead. That's another... Well, now, let's get back to the real thing. Bert, please, if you will, Skip, please. I've got to tell you a sad story. Friends, for tennis. Now, Chic of Philippines. In love. Me too. At night when you're asleep, yeah, into your tent, I'll creep, creep, creepity, creep, yeah, da da, your rule is old man with me. All right, man, let's play that thing. Blow it. Yeah, that's not bad. You see me playing the shapery with that? Who was it who used to sing a lot like that? It was Rose Murphy. Yeah, she sang a little bit like that. Didn't have quite the beat that I've got, but she sang like that. Kids. Now, boys have very, very different, and we're not even dealing with basic biological things here. Boys have very, very different instincts than girls about stuff like that. I mean, I just can't see a chick going into a surplus store and looking at Selsun Motors. Can you? No, that's just an impossibility. You can't see it. Now, I'm sure that tomorrow morning I'm going to get 5,000 letters from girls who claim that they do that. But I have yet to see it. I don't care what you write in your letter. I have yet to see it, and I haunt many of those joints. Once in a while, a girl will come in looking for a surplus army jacket, something like that. It's all connected with vanity and ego. But it is not an egotistical thing when a guy's in there looking at Selsun Motors. Who knows? The difference between male and female is a fantastic gulf. And it's much greater than Vogue magazine would have you believe. Now, one of the basic kid urges, male-type kid urges, is to fly things. I mean it. I mean, to get things up in the air. And I used to build kites by the millions. All kinds of kites. You did that, too, didn't you, Skip? Must have built kites. And, of course, as we built kites, me and Bruner and Flick would build these kites. Now, we built all types. Sometimes we'd build the big triangular type box kites. In fact, one of the greatest experiences I've ever had as a kite flyer was there was you experiment, you see. This is something else girls don't really do a great deal of, is experimenting with technical things. And we began to experiment around the whole concept of building the tiniest kite you could build that would actually fly, and I mean fly consistently and be stable. And I remember there was a kid named Falk in our neighborhood. And Henry Falk, his name was. And Falk built a kite that became sort of a cause celeb among all the kids. He built a tiny box kite that was no bigger than maybe, oh, I would say roughly, not much more than an inch and a half to 2 inches high. Tiny thing. It was made of very fine Japanese paper, the kind used on the lightest model airplanes. And it was very fine, 1/32nd inch balsa, even finer than that. He sanded even that down and used the lightest type of airplane dope that he could get to glue this together. And it was a tiny triangular shape. If you look down on the top of it, Skip, it was triangular shaped. You know, it's a three-sided box kite, and it had three main longerons that went like that. And the long way, it was roughly an inch and a half to 2 inches high. And it was covered, it had the little panels around it. It was actually a tiny scale model of a legitimate large-size box kite. And he covered it with blue and white paper. The top was this very light blue paper, and the bottom was this very light blue paper. And then he went around and went to a sewing store where they sell buttons and junk like that. And he bought the finest thread that he could get. There is a certain kind of very fine silk thread that is used for a certain type of hem stitching for very fine things like fine lace handkerchiefs and so on. So fine that if you just took this thread, you could just pull it apart. It just broke. It was silk. And he bought about 5 spools of this stuff, which he spliced together. And he put it on a spool. And then all 5 spools were put on a spool. And I remember him standing out on the street, like waiting for a bus. And he would let this box cut. It would go right up. He'd just hold it in his hand. And the slightest breeze, almost a breeze that's imperceptible, he would let this box kite go up. And he would feed this string out. And it was wild. He would stand on the street corner, waiting for a bus, or going to school, and his little box kite would float about 30 feet above his head. Just up there. You couldn't even see the string. It was insane. It was a tiny thing. And everybody's cheering. You know, this is a wild... It was really an achievement, really. Well, we discovered then that there was a national kite-flying contest. Did you know that there's a national kite-flying championship and there's a whole association and all that? Well, they wrote about it in the model airplane news. And so Falk entered his little kite in the miscellaneous contest. And he overnight became a hero, not only a hero, a legend in town. He won the gold medal for the most unusual miscellaneous kite. And he came back. It was held in Cleveland or someplace like that. He came back with his little kite with medals hanging all over him. And here's what was so maddening. We went around and tried to build these things. Nobody could build a kite. It's quite often this way. Well, the first kite he built was still the most successful of all of them. He never built one again that was as small and as beautiful as that first one. And I began to build them. The smallest I ever built was about 2.5, maybe 3 inches. That I could get flying. I could not get the tiny ones to fly. And I remember Falk with his beautiful little kite standing out there. Ooh, son of a gun's flying. But this is a male thing. You just don't see girls do this kind of thing. But this story of the kids with the camera and the helium balloon reminds me of one of the great tragedies of my kidhood. That we're building kites, you see, and as you build, you begin to make variations. You begin to have all kinds of... We used to... all kinds of technical innovations. For example, one of the things we used to do, we would take a kite, and you can build... we used to build little wire attachments on the kite so that when she got up maybe 300 or 400 feet, we'd get her well up there, the kite would drop a parachute. Yeah, you've done that. Well, then we used to attach flares to the parachute. For example, one of the tricks we had was to attach with a time fusing situation, which you could build. We used to attach sparklers, and that thing would drop a sparkler, and it would light, and it would come down. Well, one day, I'm standing out there, and we're flying the kites, and I got this idea. So I said, gee, wouldn't it be great if we could take pictures from the kite? This is a kid urge to take pictures from the kite. And so I ran in a house. Now, 2 years before, one of my absolutely prized pieces of personal property was a great gift that I got, Christmas gift, an Argus 35mm camera. You know that Argus they had? It was a great little camera, and I really dug that camera. And I went in the house, and I got this camera, and I was trying to hook it on the kite and figure out how I could trigger it and all that. Well, I got that kite up. We had a big kite about 5-6 feet high, and we got that baby up. And sure enough, we were able to trigger that kite. We were able to trigger the camera. And we got some pictures. Of course, we got a cloud, got a piece of the string once. And the one time we got a little piece of the earth down there. We were really wildly excited until that terrible, awful Saturday that it happened. My kite is now riding up about maybe 400 or 500 feet, and Flick and Bruner and all of us are running around trying to get this thing working. We took a long thread, and we had put little guide loops on the string so that it wouldn't flop around, little guide loops, and that thread went right up the string, and we could operate the camera with this thread. Well, it's up there now. We're paying it out. It's laying up there, and the wind was a good cracking wind. It was just cracking along there, flopping along, and the tail of the kite was flopping back and forth. And the camera, I could see the camera hanging up there, and I had two brass clips that I had made, which were attached to the belly bow of the kite itself. It was very stable. It's hanging up there. Well, I don't know to this day. it's like guys with an Atlas, a Gina rocket will all of a sudden take off and head for Venezuela. You know, they can only guess what happened, really. Well, I do not know to this day. That kite is standing up there about 400 or 500 feet up in the air, beautiful, up against the sky. You see it outlined in my mind. My camera, remember, my pride and joy, is getting ready to take a picture. And I take the thread, and I say, okay, all set. Now, is it pointing down? And the guys are looking up. They have these little binoculars, these dime store field glasses we got. And I says, okay, all right, now here I go now. Watch it now. Is it pointing down to the ground? I want to get a picture of the ground. And Bruner's looking at me. He says, yeah, it's pointing to the ground now. Because the kite was flopping around. So yeah, it's pointing to the ground. Quick now. So I tug it like that. He says, okay, looks like it's good. All of a sudden, it went slack. I felt it go slack, this little string that I was pulling, this thread. I felt it go slack. And sure enough, just like that, I saw a tiny black object leave the kite. I don't have to tell you the rest, friends. I don't know whether you've ever dropped a 35-millimeter Argus camera from, say, 400 feet up. That's about 40 stories, friends. That thing, I could see it coming down, this little black dot, over and over and over and over again. It landed right smack in the middle of Cleveland Street, which was made of the hardest known concrete of the period. I would say, conservatively, that my Argus camera covered an area of over an acre and a half. Pulverized. We just stood there, looked. Everybody ran down to look. Of course, what was worse was that all my friends cheered. That was an exciting thing. See my camera fall 450 feet. That was spread out. My mother came out on the steps, and she saw all this. She saw the tragedy. And like all women types, she says, well, I told you. Women don't understand Columbus. They don't understand Lovell and Borman. They just don't. Anders, they don't understand Vasco da Gama. You've never heard of a great woman explorer, you know. She comes along and maybe cooks or something, but, you know, well, do we have to go to the New World, Columbus? I mean, what's there that isn't here? WOR, New York, and now the news.
Detail on the hour from the WOR newsroom, Lester Smith reporting. The United States Command in Saigon reports the first American fatalities in the Laotian invasion. It says that 4 American Army helicopter crewmen were killed when their craft was shot down by enemy gunfire in southern Laos. South Vietnamese forces carrying out the actual ground invasion reported only light resistance as they moved 10 miles into southern Laos on the first day of the campaign to cut the Ho Chi Minh Trail. America's ambassador to the United Nations, Charles Yost, told the Security Council in New York tonight that the United States fully supports the reasons behind South Vietnam's invasion of Laos. However, in Washington, announcement of the official opening of the drive has drawn a storm of reaction from critics of the administration's war policies. The action was condemned by Senate Foreign Relations Committee Chairman J. William Fulbright, who called for Secretary of State William Rogers to testify at a closed meeting of the committee tomorrow. Senate Democratic Leader Mike Mansfield also denounced the action. He warned that if it fails, it would cause a change in plans for United States troop withdrawals from Vietnam. On the administration side, the move was supported by House Republican Minority Leader Gerald Ford. Apollo 14 tonight put another mark in the history books. The first live press conference held from outer space. In a televised 20-minute session, astronauts Alan Shepard, Edward Mitchell, and Stuart Roosa answered reporters' questions relayed to them by Mission Control in Houston. Shepard and Roosa said they were within 100 yards of reaching the rim of the Cone Crater, and only time defeated their attempt to scale the moon landmark. They also described the so-called forest of boulders they walked through in the crater, saying that some of them towered as high as 12 feet. Shepard also cleared up the details of his highly publicized space prank, the record-setting golf ball drive on the moon. He was asked exactly how many balls he hit in his three swings and how far they went.
Well, he saw the whole action on television. I missed the first one. The second one went perhaps a couple hundred yards, and the third one perhaps about 400 yards, which is not bad for a 6 iron.
Let me add, there wasn't any green in sight.
There are no green rocks.
That gallery commentary came from fellow moonwalker Ed Mitchell. Everything continues smoothly aboard Apollo 14. It's scheduled for its scheduled splashdown in the Pacific at 4:04 p.m. tomorrow. Violence continues in Northern Ireland. The latest wave of trouble touched off when a British Army scout car accidentally hit and killed a 5-year-old girl in a Roman Catholic neighborhood in Belfast. Street mobs rushed British soldiers following the incident. Two army vehicles also were ambushed and bombed, wounding two British soldiers. A short distance away, four children were injured by a burst of machine gun bullets in a crossfire between Catholics and Protestants. We'll have more news after this. You believe the old saying, you get what you pay for? Well, if you do, get a copy of the new 1971 Consumer Reports Buying Guide before you spend another dollar. Check the brand name report on men's raincoats, where you'll find a $70 coat without a liner that's no better than a $60 raincoat with a removable alpaca lining. Check the report on loudspeakers. It could save you as much as $170. Check everything from electric scissors to automobiles, and you'll discover you often don't get what you think you're paying for. This 448-page book rates over 2,000 models of various products. It's yours as a bonus for subscribing now to Consumer Reports. A year subscription, 11 monthly issues, plus the 1972 buying guide issue, when published, costs $8, $3.90 less than the newsstand price. Send no money, you'll be billed. Call 867-1441 or rush a postcard with your name, address, and zip code number to Consumer Reports, WOR, New York, 10018. And for greater convenience, call 867-1441. A deputy New York City police inspector is in critical condition at Flushing Hospital with injury suffered tonight when he was struck by another car while changing a tire on his car during a rainstorm at 149th Street and Cross Island Parkway. 56-year-old Charles Doonan of the 3rd Division in Manhattan is reported suffering from shock and multiple injuries, including fractures of the left leg and the right shoulder. The metropolitan area's more than day-long bout with the wind and rain apparently is almost over. The rain has tapered off this evening. The winds died down within the past hour, although only a half an hour ago, the Weather Bureau recorded a gust of 53 miles an hour at its Rockefeller Center headquarters in mid-Manhattan. Right now, only light rain is falling in mid-Manhattan. The winds are down to 7 miles an hour, with occasional gusts up to 38, although there was some flooding reported earlier on the Brooklyn Queens Expressway and the Harlem River Drive. Apparently, the situation has not been nearly so severe as last night when the weather created major traffic problems. In New Jersey, three Bergen County communities were blacked out for over an hour tonight when high winds downed an overhead transmission line. Public Service Electric and Gas Company said about 1,500 homes were temporarily without electricity in Midland Park, Wyckoff, and Waldwick. Earlier, City Island off the Bronx spent much of the day without being able to make outgoing phone calls because of water that seeped into a manhole near the island's central telephone office. Consolidated Edison is continuing its search to pinpoint the exact cause of last night's power failure that caused scattered blackouts and voltage reductions throughout New York City. Con Ed Board Chairman Charles Liu says the cause of the trouble has been narrowed to either a transformer failure or a circuit overload. Utility officials modified their original belief that the failure centered on a blown transformer in mid-Manhattan's Waterside plant. They said that further studies show that there was no transformer damage. They said apparently the transmission failure, wherever it occurred, slammed shut switches in the Waterside plant with an explosion-like report leading to the faulty belief that the transformer had blown. Lou said that he's confident last night's exact failure will not happen again, although another Con Ed spokesman warned in an electrical system, you can always have a recurrence. Luce warned that his utility needs more power plants as insurance against future failures. He said the Con Ed system would be, in his words, stronger and more able to withstand overloads if we had more new powerful generating capacity. We'll have more news after this. It's free skiing, winter carnival vacation time.
Well, I think we've run out of time for news. Gene Shepherd and a somewhat lengthy news rebroadcast from February 8th, 1971. And that's about it for this edition of Dustbin of History. We'll be back next week with the final episode of Stories of J.G. Ballard from Vanishing Point. The next episode of Nightfall, which I misspoke. We already heard The Monkey's Paw. No, next week is another classic. The Telltale Heart. That's the one. And what? Another lost episode of Gene Shepherd. So that's it. Thanks for tuning in. And do support our Tower Fund. You've heard all about it. Well, WBAI, despite the fact that the January drive is over, well, we still need your pledges moving forward to keep the station on the air. 212-209-2950 to make a tax-deductible pledge to keep this radio station on the air.
Hi, George. Well, finished with the show. What do you want me to do now?
Did you have a good time in there?
Yeah.
Oh, boy, it was fun.
Great. How'd you like to do it every day?
Yeah, yeah. That would be neat.
Hey, wait a minute. Do I still get to be the janitor?
Sure.
Oh, okay. It's a deal. Well, I'm going to come back.